Lulu, born on this day in 1948, to Sir with Love, the great soundtrack from the movie by the great Sidney Poitier. We're here now with Marilyn Mosby, who won the Democratic primary and is running to become the next state's attorney for Baltimore City. She has one write-in opponent, and Russell Neverdon, who joined us last week. And Marilyn, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Always good to see you.
I'm excited.
Yeah, here we are. One more day.
Yeah, one more day. This has been quite a journey. I've been doing this for 2 years. You know, and I've been very, very fortunate to get the nomination for Democratic nominee for state's attorney. You know, just the fact that so many people have entrusted me with my vision to move this city forward. I'm just so humbled and so honored. It's been quite a journey, but I'm ready to get to work.
Ready to start. 410-319-8888. Please join us here. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages, or please join the conversation at 410-319-8888. So, you know, people didn't take your campaign very seriously in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. We all know that. That was just something that occurred in the beginning. But then you won this election. You still have an opponent. Let's talk about some of the things that, before we get into your vision of what you would do at state's attorney, mm-hmm. talk about some very serious issues facing the city and how you would respond to them. One criticism people have thrown out on this air, and then Julie has written in here earlier today, I'll just read it real quick, her email. Please ask Ms. Mosby why she thinks that she should be qualified to be the next state's attorney since she only graduated law school in 2005. Isn't that a little bit too much inexperience for something so serious as state's attorney of Baltimore City?
And what I can say is this, Mark, you know, I was a prosecutor in Baltimore City. I've worked in the state's attorney's office for over 6 years with an 80% conviction rate. I've worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston, the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., the Suffolk County Homicide Unit. And I started my career right here in Baltimore City. This is my heart and this is my passion. And I think that had everything to do with why I was so successful as a prosecutor in Baltimore City. Clearly, I do believe that I have the experience and the vision and the foresight to move our city forward. You know, if not me, who? If not now, when? You know, we see a disconnect between law enforcement and communities all throughout the country. And I got to tell you, I live in the heart of West Baltimore. I don't have to turn on the news and open up the newspaper to see the crime plaguing our communities. And I can say that, you know, having the background that I have as being a prosecutor, but also as a wife and as a mother and as a resident of West Baltimore, I understand that it takes vision and foresight to move our city forward. Our city is so much more than just the wire, but it's really hard to dispel that perception when we turn on the news and when we open up the newspaper. So am I prepared to lead this task in front of me? Absolutely. And I think that that's been proven through my service in the state's attorney's office, proven through my track record.
So when people push that question, I mean, that you've been out of school 9 years?
Uh-huh.
Right? So people are saying, well, how can that be enough time to know how to run this complex office with all these complex problems?
Well, I got to tell you, this is something that this has been my heart and my passion. You know, I come from 5 generations of police officers, so law enforcement has been ingrained. It was after a tragedy that espouse my interest in reforming a criminal justice system that disproportionately affects so many people. My cousin, who grew up with me like a brother, was killed right outside my home. And if it wasn't for the testimony of a neighbor who not only cooperated with police, but he testified in court, my family wouldn't have received any sort of justice. It was at that moment that my 17-year-old cousin was now going to a grave, but the individual responsible for his death was also 17 years old, that I saw this system and I said, how could we have gotten to that young person before he got to the criminal justice system? So this is something that started when I was 14 years old. And I got to tell you that I worked really hard. I knew I wanted to reform this system. So I said, is it better to be a defense attorney or is it better to work as a prosecutor? And working for the U.S. attorneys, as I said, in Boston, D.C., Suffolk County Homicide Unit, and serving a year as a criminal defense attorney, I came to the conclusion that prosecutors have a great deal of discretion that not only affect the defendant and the victims of crime, but have collateral consequences on our community. And that's an awesome amount of discretion. And I got to tell you that that's ultimately the reason why I became a prosecutor. And again, started my career right here in Baltimore City. So this is not something that, you know, I just decided one day I was going to wake up and do. This is something that I've been passionate about. I went to a top 25 law school. You know, I graduated from Tuskegee University magna cum laude. This is something that I've worked towards my entire life. It's reforming a system that disproportionately affects so many people. So this is something that I'm very passionate about. And it showed, as I stated, not only in my skills and my success in the state's attorney's office, but also it shows in the success and how I ran my campaign. I will reform the criminal justice system, and I will be the next state's attorney for Baltimore City, and I'm very much qualified for the position.
I want to get to that reform. Let's get to a phone call first at 410-319-8888 and your ideas about reform. We're talking with Marla Mosby, who is the Democratic candidate to become the next state's attorney for the city of Baltimore, 410-319-8888. And Leslie, you're on the air. Good morning, Leslie. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling to really try to figure out. I really don't know much about Ms. Maryland. I don't know what her platform is. And most importantly, I'm trying to figure out why she's never taken the time to debate the issues with Russell Neverdon. I just feel like the debate will really, you know, really solidify what is her view. I've never really heard her platform. All I know that is that she has five generations of police officers. What does that mean? I know that she was quoted in the Baltimore Sun for saying that, you know, if you so much as jaywalk, I'm going to bring you down. How is that going to help Baltimore City?
Okay, well, first and foremost, I just have to say that I've been on this campaign for well over 2 years. So I'm not sure or certain why you would not know my platform, but I can tell you first and foremost, my top priority are going to be the violent repeat offenders that wreak havoc in our communities. It's a very small number of those individuals. And those are the individuals that I saw as a prosecutor day in and day out in Baltimore City that were a part of this revolving door. And we can see that, you know, I'll give you an example. Carter Scott, who was one of the youngest homicide victims in Cherry Hill last May, the individual responsible for his death just got off on murder charges 4 months before. The individual he was going after just got off on murder charges 6 months before. I find that completely unacceptable. When you look at Nelson Clifford, for example, the five-time serial rapist who was breaking into people's homes and raping women by knife point, he's gotten off 4 times in the past 3 years, despite DNA evidence. And the way he was getting off was that the women would have the audacity and the courage to testify against this man. He would get up on the stand and say, yeah, these women consented to having intercourse with me. So rather than sit back and do absolutely nothing about it, once again, I took sexual assault survivors to Annapolis and child abuse survivors to Annapolis. We testified before the Judiciary Committee to try to conform Maryland laws to federal laws, which already recognize that when you're talking about child molesters and child offenders, these individuals usually have a pattern of predatory behavior. And why wouldn't we conform Maryland law to federal law? That's the sort of leadership that I will bring to this office, and that's what I intend to do. I can just say that I've been out in the community, out and about for the past 2 years. You know, this is something that I didn't, again, just wake up and decide that I was going to do. I've been engaging churches and community members and business advocates throughout the past 2 years. Everybody has a stake in the safety of our neighborhoods, and it's going to take everybody to come to the table. So, you know, that was shown and proven through the Enough is Enough rallies that my husband and I put on last year when 31% of all the homicides were taking place in West Baltimore. Rather than sit back and absolutely do nothing, we stood up. We went with the churches, we went with the police, community advocates, and we took to the streets where we were doing these prayer vigils, and we were supposed to do them for 7 weeks. We ended up doing them for 27 weeks. It started out with 20 people. Before we knew it, there were over 200 people. And we did it not only last year, we did it this year. We did it for 21 weeks. So as far as being out and about, this is, you know, this is something that I've been doing for the past 2 years.
Well, the other part of what Leslie asked was why you wouldn't debate Russell Neverdon during the course of this general election.
Well, I can tell you that once again, I'm not trying to avoid anybody. I can tell you that I have debated Wrestle Never Dawn during the primary, you know? And I got to also say that this is more about taking it to the voters. And that's what I've done in the primary, and that's what I'll continue to do, you know, even up until tomorrow. This is not about showboating or, you know, this is about the community. This is about engaging constituents. And that's what I've done, and that's what I'll continue to do.
Let me get another caller in here. I'll come back to that. 410-319-8888. Kevin in East Baltimore, you're on the air. Kevin, you're on the air. Can you turn down the radio? Hey, Kevin. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Good morning to you and your
esteemed
guest.
Good morning.
I just wanted to know, like, how come, you know, you won't debate the other candidate, and I'm just really trying to get a feel for your platform and your issues and everything, and it just seems like, you know, all your answers and questions are pointed and prepared. You know, I just would really like to get an honest assessment of how you think the city could be ran and the office could be better improved. Thank you. I'll listen to your answer off air.
So what he was just saying in the beginning, I mean, we have had a lot of have had callers here saying before, why hasn't Ms. Mosby debated Mr. Never Dawn in a forum for the general election for the voters to hear, either on radio, on television, or in public?
Well, I got to tell you, Mark, I have not been officially asked to debate anybody, okay? I can tell you that, again, I've done that, been there, done that. I'm taking this to the voters. So I believe I've answered the question with regard to, you know, the debate between anybody else. I've been out in the community engaging constituents, those individuals who are going to the polls. I don't take anything for granted, which is why I still have individuals in my team at the polls. You know, this is not something that I think I have in the bag. This is something that I, you know, don't take for granted.
Well, I don't want to.
If you want to talk about the policies and what I intend to do,
I
mean,
do want to
do
that.
That.
But that's, I'm going to spend the rest of the program doing that. But I guess the reason, that one more question about that, just is because
you've asked three of them about the same.
I've asked two, but I mean, it's just finally is that I mean that most people in a part of our democratic process think debates are really critical for people to understand what different politicians stand for or people running for office stand for.
And so for the fourth time, like I said, I've done that, been there, done that. We've debated. So you can check the record. You can see that he and I have gone through this course and this dialogue, but there's not much else for me to say about that. We've done it. We've been there. I've done that. I've had cases with Russell Never Dawn as a prosecutor, won my cases with Russell Never Dawn as a prosecutor.
He on the show said last week said you lost them.
No. I won them. There's been a lot of misinformation put out there, but I've won them. I won a case against Russell Never Dawn in court. But in any event, this is not what this is about. I'm here to share my vision for this office.
So talking about what could happen, I mean, one of the things that I think one of the reasons that Greg Bergstein lost the race was because one of the reasons, a number of them, was because people felt he was like very distant from the public and wasn't answering the public's kind of concerns about certain issues. And so when you look at things like what happened with the West family and other things that happened in this city with Tyrone West, how would you have handled that differently if you were state's attorney? Some people said one of the things we talked about in the show recently was that it's within the state's attorney's purview to prosecute police officers the same way that citizens are prosecuted, but state attorneys just don't do that.
Well, I think I've been very clear from the beginning. I do come from, and your caller mentioned the fact that I come from five generations of police officers.
Right.
I'm very proud of coming from five generations of police officers. My grandfather was actually one of the founding members of the Black Police Organization in Massachusetts. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, a majority of the police officers are hardworking police officers who day in and day out risk their lives for the constituents of Baltimore City. That's first and foremost, just like my grandfather. When you have rogue police officers who go above their authority and for all intents and purposes abuse that authority, from a prosecutor's perspective, my duty is to seek justice, not convictions. That means applying justice fairly and equally with or without a badge. I've been very clear throughout this campaign that will take place. I will be applying justice fairly and equally. So if somebody does something that abuses their discretion and their authority, I will prosecute them the same way I would the most violent repeat offenders that I've referenced before.
Did you have any sense or opinion after reading the final resolution of these cases or the coroner's reports and either Anthony Anderson's case or Tyrone West's case, just take those two for a moment, that the state's attorney could have done something different than he did, than the office did in those
two
cases?
I do. I think that one of the biggest problems in each of those examples is there was a lack of transparency. You know, being a victim of crime myself and having to go through that grieving process, it should not have taken 9 months, you know, before you had communication with the West family. You know, the fact that they had to appeal to the city council and even to the mayor to do something about it, to release this autopsy report or to just find out how their loved one was killed. I think that's completely unacceptable. And there's been countless examples of that under this administration. You know, it was the Herschel family, for example. You know, their loved one was killed right outside of City Hall. The individual responsible should have been behind bars. He was actually behind a wheel and going. Yes. And he was going 100 miles an hour and hit their loved one. They called out during the primary, asked that we come to the press conference. They called every single media outlet across the city because they had no communication from the state's attorney's office. And they were told a week before that they were going to take a plea deal. Now, their issue was not that they were going to take a plea deal. The issue was that there was a lack of transparency and they weren't a part of the process. And having had that experience, not being a part of the process, you then feel re-victimized. And so we have countless examples of that. Tyrone West, we have, you know, the Herschel family, Anthony Anderson, where families felt re-victimized. What do I intend to do? I intend to make sure that we are bolstering victim witness services, making sure those lines of communication are open and being accessible and as transparent as possible. That's the job, and as the administrator of the criminal justice system, that's the job of the state's attorney, and that's what I intend to do.
Very quickly, I guess it's hard to say if you weren't state's attorney yet, but should any of those officers have been prosecuted for the deaths of any of those people for the two men we're talking about?
Well, Mark, I don't have the facts in front of me. I can't sit up here and tell you, you know, I don't have all of the evidence and information that the current state's attorney has before his disposal. So I can't tell you one way or another. But what I can tell you is that there could have been more transparency. And that's what I intend to do.
We're going to take a quick break. Should we take a phone call before we take the break? 410-319-8888. Let's go to Kenny in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi, my name is Kenny. How are you doing today?
Welcome.
Hi, Kenny.
Very well.
All
welcome.
Right. I just wanted to ask Ms. Mulvey a question. I just wanted to know that being that your husband is on the city council, and if you become the state's attorney, now, if his decision goes one way, or the city council goes one way on deciding on something, and wouldn't that be a conflict, you being his wife? And then, you know, because I could see that, you know, a husband can make a person change their mind of what they really believe. And I believe,
you don't know me, Kenny.
you know, I just can't see two people staying in the same household.
Well, Kenny, let me ask you this question. So what can you give an example of what kind of case that might be a conflict between the state's attorney and the city council you're talking about specifically?
Right, because there's a lot of things that the city council might want to do, but the state's attorney has to sit down and kiss the ring of the Fraternal Order of Police, and stuff might not work out right, and then, you know, there's a little conflict there.
All right, can I answer
that's
the question?
That's a fair question. Should we take a break? You can answer the question, then we'll take a break.
Kenny, I just have to say that I don't see there being a conflict of interest. I am an independent agency that is elected by the constituents of Baltimore City. So am I beholden to city council? Absolutely not. Am I beholden to a mayor? Absolutely not. I am beholden to those individuals, those community leaders, faith-based leaders, and the individuals who have elected me to office. There is no conflict of interest. And clearly, you don't know me too well, Kenny, because, you know, nobody's going to tell me anything, and I'm going to go ahead and listen. You know, I this is my heart. This is my passion. This is something that I did pursued even before my husband was on city council. I am a public servant. You know, I could have gone and I was offered jobs all across the country when I graduated from Boston College Law School. But I started my career right here in Baltimore City because I wanted to make a difference. And so this is, for me, it's not just a job. This is my passion.
We'll take a very brief break. We'll be right back with Marilyn Mosby. And we're going to go to break with Lonnie Donegan's The Battle of New Orleans. He died on this day in 2002.
We took a little bacon and we took a little beans and we fought the blooming British in a town in New Orleans where we fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. It was
through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Beach Boys, Good Vibrations. Interesting sound. Never one of my favorite groups, but I like to hear them once in a while. But Leon Theremin died on this day in 1993. And Theremin was a Russian inventor who was most famous for the theremin, one of the first electronic musical instruments that was popularized on this record, Good Vibrations, by the Beach Boys. The device was used to create those futuristic kind of sound effects in many of the sci-fi movies as well. But he passed away on this day, so we give him a little good vibration on the way out. We're here with Marilyn Mosby, who's seeking to become the next state's attorney for Baltimore City. So, Marilyn, we're talking before we went on the air about various things, about people being prosecuted, who gets prosecuted, and who doesn't. And I think that, you know, every state's attorney has wrestled with the issue of how you go after the worst actors in the city, and no one's quite got it right. And we can talk about that for a minute as well, but no one's quite got it right. But the other part that we do seem to get right, which is putting in jail and prosecuting a lot of nonviolent offenders, a lot of people who are involved in drugs, which fills our jails. And as we all know, that percentage-wise, white folks do as many drugs as black folks, which means that there's a greater number of white folks doing drugs than black folks if it's the same percentage, and that more black people go to jail for, it's almost exclusively mm-hmm. black folks going to jail for drug use. So how do you, as state's attorney, change that paradigm?
So first and foremost, your first part of your question was about the violent repeat offenders and not being able to get it right. Well, one of the things that we realized, and we spent $28,000 on an independent review commissioned by the police department, is that the state's attorney's office and the police department were not on the same page when targeting these individuals. You know, I've promised and that report actually indicated that in recent years, the violent repeat offender program has lost its impetus and its focus. I can tell you and assure you that in the first 100 days of my administration, I intend to sit down with the police department and develop a criteria in which we are targeting these individuals. We know who they are. There's absolutely no reason, and, you know, there's not going to be any sort of finger pointing. I'm going to have open lines of communication with the police commissioner, and I'm optimistic that we can get on the same page and really target these individuals. I don't believe that has been done, and that's clearly been, you know, illustrated through that report. That's first and foremost. With regard to nonviolent felony offenders, I actually, and this is something that I campaigned on as well, we know what happens when these young people get these felony convictions. They can no longer apply for jobs. They can no longer get housing. They can't even go back to school because they can't get any sort of financial aid. So what other recourse do they have but to go back out onto the streets doing what got them there in the first place? And so recognizing that awesome amount of discretion that prosecutors have, and I said getting to our children before they get to the criminal justice system, we can actually do that. And one of the programs that I want to introduce is actually been implemented and as a national model by Attorney General Kamala Harris when she was a San Francisco district attorney. It's called Back on Track. It's where you partner with the private business community. You partner with unions. You stop focusing so much on the low-level drug offenders. This program is for nonviolent felony offenders. They go through a probationary period where they learn life skills. They learn job training skills. They do community service. And at the end of that probationary period, they're given a job. And not just a $5 an hour job, but a job with benefits that they can take care of their families and their felony records are wiped clean. That's the sort of discretion that will allow us to give alternatives to these young people who do get caught up in the system, who, again, this system that disproportionately affects so many. When one in three African-American males can expect to go to prison in their lifetime, which is six times more than whites, I think that system is disproportionately affecting so many people. And there are ways in which you exercise that discretion. And that's what I intend to do, so that we offer alternatives for these young people.
So you've been following the work of David Kennedy, who was supposed to be working in the city, but I'm not sure how much we're using David Kennedy's work. David Kennedy's idea is going into a community with people, the community people around them, with the state's attorney, with law enforcement, with families, to say, okay, we know who you are. We know you're the worst offenders. We know you commit these crimes. And we're here to help you or to put your butt in jail and that's it? I mean, what do you? We haven't really implemented David's program in a massive way.
Well, I am a proponent for this program, Operation Ceasefire. This took place
In Boston.
In Boston, where I'm from, and a year after my cousin was killed. So this is very much relevant to my experiences. And I, you know, your caller called in earlier and asked about me saying if you're so much as jaywalking. She took my comment out of context. This is actually what I was referencing. For the violent repeat offenders, you give them alternatives. You bring them in, you do what is called a call-in, and you basically say you have two alternatives. Either you stop doing everything that you're doing and wreaking havoc in our communities, and I'll bring every single one of your family members, anybody associated with you, and if you so much as jaywalk, I will take you down because you are the one that are causing havoc in our communities. If, however, I'm going to give you an alternative. You have two courses of action. You can go down this way, and I'll take you down, or I'm going to offer you services. And if you want to get out of the game, if you want a job, if you need services to assist your family, we are going to do that. And that's what Operation Ceasefire is. And I'm really excited that the mayor had the foresight to bring it to Baltimore. I think that it could be very useful. And I look forward to implementing this program and being a part of it, because I think that it could be really, really make a difference.
Let's try another call in here before the end of our conversation at 410-319-8888. Let's go to Lane. Is that the caller for this hour? Lane, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Lane.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, you're on the air, Lane. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to ask the new state's attorney about initiatives for community offices to work with the community in Baltimore City. They used to have one, but then they cut it due to budget constraints. Will that be reinstituted so that we can have some other alternatives along with the programs that you already plan to establish?
So what I can say is this. I know that Commissioner Batts has implemented a community policing model, which I commend him for. I think it's important getting these police officers out of their cars, engaging constituents. I think that's the way that you break down these barriers of distrust that prevent us from getting these bad guys off the street day in and day out. But I also want to model that with the community prosecution model. And I can tell you that, you know, although the current administration has indicated that he's also following a community prosecution model, one of the first things that he did was he came in and he fired all of the community liaisons, which were the face of the office, into the community. And, you know, that was very important because these community liaisons attended the community association meetings. And again, that was the face of the office. So their voice back to the state attorney's office. And by firing these community liaisons, what that did was exacerbate distrust. And it's problematic because guess who the juries are comprised of? The community. Guess who the criminal justice system relies upon? The community. So if you have no presence and you have no visibility in various communities throughout Baltimore, guess what ends up happening when you try to get these really bad guys off the street? You can't. And so am I looking to work towards community prosecution and working with the commissioner as he employs community policing? Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm coming in the middle, and I am going to claim this. I will be coming in the middle of his budget, but I will seek to make sure that we have representation and that we are, again, engaged in various communities throughout Baltimore. It's so important.
Marilyn Mosby, tomorrow is Election Day, and she's going to become the next state's attorney for the city of Baltimore. Marilyn, you have a closing thought before we have to run?
Absolutely. I would just say, please, everyone get out and vote. Our city is so much more than what's depicted on the news and when we open up the newspaper. Living in the heart of West Baltimore, I don't have to do so. I'm raising two little girls. Our city is so much more than The Wire. But it's really hard to dispel that when we turn on the news and open up the newspaper. It is time to realize the potential of our city. That's what I intend to do. It takes vision. It takes foresight. It takes getting to our children before they get to the criminal justice system, applying justice fairly and equally with or without a badge, and really getting these violent repeat offenders off our streets. That's what I intend to do, and I need your vote. I need you to vote for me tomorrow, Tuesday, November 4th. Thank you so much, Mark.
Well, Rosie, thanks so much for coming in today.
Absolutely.
Let's talk to you on Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Good luck tomorrow.
All right. Thank you.
We'll take a very brief break. We're going to go to break here with Glenn Miller, String of Pearls, recorded on this day in 1941. And we're about to talk to Sean Tarrant. Stay with us.